Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She used all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Healthy Tuesday, Rachel. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Where are we going today?
Well, today we are prepping ourselves for Valentine's Day. I'm going to do a little preemptive strike on our relationships so that by the time we get to the 14th, maybe we all feel inspired to spend a little more time and focus on those that we love in our most intimate relationships. I know that Valentine's Day can be triggering for some people, or the whole idea that we stop down and have a day just dedicated to love and romance. But I am a huge proponent of Valentine's Day and taking this moment to stop down and actually acknowledge our relationships. Because even though there is that Hallmark aspect of it and that feeling like we have to get a gift, it's very, very important to have intentional moments where we stop and think about our relationships. You know, we need to nurture our intimate relationships. We need to spend time on them. We need to invest in them. And one of the challenges is that we get so busy in our lives that we forget to take care of those things that are most important to us. So as cheesy as Valentine's Day may be on the outside, it's incredibly important to our mental health and well-being to spend more than one day. But if we're just going to take one day a year, really focusing in on what it means to be deeply connected in a meaningful way to another human being. The challenge today is that we're almost a year into the pandemic, and a lot of people are suffering in many, many ways. And one of the ways we're seeing the suffering unfold is in an increase in divorces. The divorce rate has gone up over the course of the last year. We've also seen increases in intimate partner violence. So relationships that weren't doing well before being locked down together have seen an increase, an escalation in problems. So there is that one aspect of relationships that were already teetering are really being compressed at this point. And on the other hand, there are some relationships, some couples that are thriving right now because they've had an opportunity to be together so much that they've reestablished this connection. They have rediscovered why they are a couple, and they're starting to reassess their relationships. And so wherever you may fall on that spectrum, you know, the discovery that, wow, this contract only worked when we only saw each other for 4 hours a day, or to, wow, I don't ever get enough time with my spouse, and I want to make sure that happens as we move forward, the pandemic has exposed a lot of strengths and weaknesses in our relationships. So I was looking at Divorce Magazine, which I find fascinating that there's been a magazine devoted just to divorce and healthy divorces for the last 24 years. So I was looking at them, and they had an article about things to consider before filing, you know, things to think about before you jump in and visit the divorce lawyer. And the first thing they said is maybe your spouse is not the problem. And before we jump into looking at how we get out, we might start recognizing that what you're feeling, that fear, the boredom, the worry, might be the projection of your experience of living through the pandemic, and not that you're living with someone that you can no longer tolerate. The second component, though, is your spouse may actually be the big problem. And so, as I mentioned before, couples are seeing amplified issues around intimate partner violence. And so it might be time to be creating some sort of safe exit strategy. But number three was the return of your adult children may be the problem in your marriage right now. Because a lot of families have come in together, they're working as a pod, and that brings in new stressors. If your kids have been out of the house for a while and you've re-navigated how you're working as a couple, having them reemerge can cause a lot of stress and strain. So it's a really good time right now for deep reflection, for reassessing of our personal goals and values on many levels, and kind of considering what will I do with my one extraordinary life? Like, this is an ideal opportunity. And we talked about this a few months back, where a lot of people are feeling like they want to shut down or hide out or hope it all goes away soon. And I challenged you at that time, instead of going inward, to actually project outward. You know, where do I want to be when we get to the other side? Start planting those seeds for what your life will look like when we're free to move around again. Instead of holding out and waiting, start doing the work so when the doors open again, you're ready to move forward. And it's the same with our relationships. This is a good time to reassess, to double down. And as unpopular as this statement is going to be for all of my single friends, research continuously supports that those who are in healthy relationships have a higher quality of life than those who are alone. And that also has risen to the surface with the pandemic, that people who are living solo are struggling much more than those who are in healthy relationships. And I keep underlining the healthy part. But those in healthy relationships live longer, they have higher quality of lives, they heal quicker, they have better immune systems, they're more physically fit, they feel less pain. The list goes on and on. And so I invited a friend, a guest to the show today, who knows a lot about relationships and love and making it work. And I thought we'd have a discussion about some key things that we could do in our own lives and in your lives that might enhance our relationships to kind of resuscitate maybe a stale love life, to maybe reinvigorate the commitment to your marriage. So my guest today is Bob Kam. You've heard him before talking about love and love after 60. And today he's wearing his hat as a certified Imago educator. And we'll talk about what Imago relationship therapy is and what it looks like. Bob is also an author and a poet and a consultant. And so if we're lucky enough today, Bob will read us a poem at some point throughout the next hour. But I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And you are welcome to be part of the conversation in a non-traditional way. If you'd like to give us a call at 805-549-8855, you can ask your question or make your comment to Rachel, and she'll share it with us. You can follow us on Instagram, The Reluctant Therapist. And as we've done the last couple of weeks, we're actually Instagram live right now. So if you follow us on Instagram, The Reluctant Therapist, or you can jump on, you can actually see Bob and myself and Rachel sitting on the Zoom. Hey, everyone. Thanks for joining us. You can send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Follow us on Facebook. You can podcast our show by visiting Apple Podcasts or however you find podcasts. Search A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, leave a review, and you'll be able to listen to our shows whenever it is convenient for you. So that's where we're going today. I'm glad you're here with us. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back to start our conversation with Bob Kam. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
The first time ever I saw your face, I thought the sun the gifts you gave to the dark and the endless skies, my love.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and my guest today is Bob Kam. Bob is a certified Imago educator. He's also an author, a poet, and a consultant. And I invited Bob on today because he has an expertise in love and relationships that goes beyond just his training as an Imago therapist, but he also has a lifetime of kind of exploring what love looks like. So Bob, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
It's fun to have you back again. And let's, before we jump into the whole overall topic, can you describe what Imago therapy is, kind of where it started and what the essence or idea of Imago therapy is?
Sure. Well, it was created in the 80s by Harville Hendricks and Helen LaKelly Hunt, a husband and wife team. They published their first book called Getting the Love You Want in 1988. And that was the seminal work, really kind of laid down the landscape for Imago. And the word Imago sometimes confuses people, but it's just a Latin word, the same root for imagination or image. Okay, so it really refers to the fact that we all carry around a kind of composite image within us that is created in childhood. And ultimately that influences the kind of choices that we will make unconsciously in adulthood. And the practice, and this is what I really like the most about Imago, is that Imago as a therapy is very specific in terms of the practices that it offers. And the central practice is dialogue. And so it's a structured dialogue. There's several different ones, but the core Imago dialogue is a structured dialogue where one person is speaking at a time, the other person is listening, mirroring back periodically what they hear, ultimately the goal being to sort of cross the bridge and live, if only for a few moments, in their partner's world, to really try to take their own blinders off and see things through the eyes of the other that they are married to or partnered with. And so then to validate those feelings and to find a way to empathize with those feelings, even though you may have a totally different point of view. And given that otherness is, you know, sort of the abiding fact of human life. I mean, we are all others. We're all of us. Each of us is unique. Elizabeth Barrett has never existed before she did. And you've had your own unique experience coming into adulthood. You know, the challenge is really for us to get outside of our own skin and outside of our own lenses to truly understand this other person that we became so enthralled with when we first met.
One of the things I've always loved about Harville Hendrick's work was this idea that we choose our spouse perfectly.
Yes.
Because the person that we've chosen somehow fills a need that we had going into that marriage. But quite often that need that they're fulfilling also becomes the thing that's most irritating about them.
Right.
And that's such a simple way of looking at how conflict in marriages come about, because that thing you loved most, the thing that was healing about your spouse, can be the thing that drives you apart.
Well, right. And it sounds counterintuitive, but one of Harville's most famous sayings is conflict is growth trying to happen. So the conflicts that occur between us and our partners are actually there to kind of shake us out of our habitual ways of feeling and thinking and seeing things, and to open us to understand what it is that shaped our own lenses, mm-hmm. so that we can get beyond them and see the other person with clarity. So each of us tends to carry sort of repressed aspects within ourselves. In other words, if I'm a really feeling person, I'm a partner with somebody who's more cerebral. Mm-hmm. So if I'm a really feeling person, it's possible that the cerebral part of me was somewhat suppressed. And so I'm drawn to the cerebral part of them. In their case, the feeling part of them may have been somewhat suppressed. And so they're drawn to the feeling part of me. That's just one example. I mean, you can have 10,000 examples. But Harville's and Helen's theory is very simple, is that we partner with another person who will stimulate pain in us. As you said, the thing that we fall in love with initially, because it's this suppressed part of us, we're very drawn to it. But then later, when things calm down, with the high tide of neurotransmitters and hormones sort of subsides to a normal level, then the old messages return, which is, well, you weren't supposed to be that way. You know, your family matrix basically said to you, overtly or covertly, you are not supposed to be that feeling person or that cerebral person or that very active person or that very, you know, just sensing person. You're not supposed to be that person. So the thing that you were drawn to now starts to, you know, upset you. Well, and that's as it's supposed to be.
And it seemed like such a great example, too, of the cerebral person being drawn to the feelings person and the feelings of the cerebral, because then as you get into that relationship, if you're a very feelings person, you then start getting frustrated. Why is my cerebral spouse not feeling? Why is my cerebral spouse not filling me emotionally? And so therein lies the rub. And then the cerebral person is like, why are you constantly asking me to talk about my feelings? And so it seems that the work therein lies with how do we, one, have grace for our partner's style, how they react in the world, having grace. And then number two, how do we develop that side of ourself that it's lacking? How do we, how do we start to become more feeling or more cerebral to balance our own experience?
Exactly. And basically what Harville and Helen are saying is that those parts of us that have been moderated down, that is so deeply entrenched on a neurological basis that in order to break out of it, to grow out of it, we really need a clear structure of practice that we can use that will gradually sort of tease out opportunities for us to experience that side that we kind of suppressed. And so that's what dialogue is.
So the dialogue in some ways becomes the referee of our go-to relational fallback, which is conflict.
Right. The whole purpose of the dialogue is to take what might have been a conflict and turn it into a meeting, a connection, a true connection where, you know, let's say in the beginning, you really listened deeply to me. And then afterwards we change and I really listen deeply to you. And you would be mirroring me as I'm speaking. I would mirror you as you're speaking. And we do that. You know, some people misunderstand mirroring. They say, well, you're asking me to be a parrot, just to parrot back what my partner say. No, I want to make sure that I hear what you're saying the way it comes to you to express. I'm not going to change it with my words. I'm going to use your words because they're your words. And I want to enter your world. And then when it's my turn, you do the same. So it really, I think, sort of calls us to rejuvenate the idea that a relationship is a sacred thing. And we give a lot of lip service, but we don't give enough time and energy to the mystery and the magic of connection. And as structured as the dialogues are, magic happens within that structure. You know, it's kind of like alchemy, you know, in the days of the alchemists, I mean, they actually had vessels that they used to try to create, you know, gold out of lead, for example. They didn't just do it all over a table. They had a vessel to hold it, right?
And so our marriage becomes that vessel, that space that we hold all of the capacity or potential of who we can become, which is right. Another part of Harville's work that I love, which, you know, our capacity to reach spiritual fulfillment within our marriage, because right. Especially in the late 1970s, and he started doing his work in the 80s, the late 1970s with that high divorce rate post second wave feminism, people mm-hmm. were just bailing on their relationships as if they were, you know, just a cast off, like a plastic bottle. And the mantra at the time was, I need to find myself. I need to find myself. I'm being held back in this marriage. I got to find myself. And Harville Hendricks like, whoa, time out. You know, everything you need to know about yourself is in that relationship. And the reason right. you're failing is because it's really uncomfortable to have to do the work within that relationship to get to your true self. And we tend right. to run away from the things that get really hard because we think there's a better option. But as he points out, you're just going to continue that same dynamic in every relationship, which is why right. second and third marriages end at higher rates than first. So I think right. that's something that really hasn't been brought to the forefront of marriage counseling or discussions about marriage at all, was that the thing we most need can be healed within that relationship and not this old 70s mantra of I need to leave to find myself.
Right. Correct. You know, I think I'm a good example of this. I don't see it quite as black and white as Harville and Helen tend to. Harville in particular is pretty insistent on this, but I had very intense, very deep therapy myself in my late 20s. And it was enormously helpful to me. And at the same time, there were feelings that I could not possibly access just working on me. There are feelings that will only be stirred up in a relationship. And again, people misunderstand, and I wish this were being taught starting in sixth grade. The romantic period, which may last a few months to a few years, is supposed to end.
Yes.
Right? It's supposed to end. And a lot of people, as you said, in the 70s, but even today, a lot of people will bail somewhere between a year and 2 years because the romantic period is over. They're no longer getting that sort of internal pharmacopoeia that they were high on that we call romance. And now they're faced with a challenge of how do I really show up in this relationship, given that I am as a wounded child in many ways, and so is my partner. How do we do this?
Right.
So, you know, Harville had his own issues. I mean, he came to his insights partly because of a divorce that he went through, and started asking himself the question, why does this keep happening, right? So I want people to hear the romantic period is lovely and wonderful. Yes, if you could bottle it, you could sell it on the street corner and be a bazillionaire, but we're not there yet. It's supposed to end, and then we're supposed to have our feet on the ground and begin to actually see the other person and be challenged to grow and to do it together.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to my guest, Bob Kam. He is a certified Imago educator. He's also an author and a poet. And we're talking about how to resuscitate our relationships during a pandemic, how to bring some life back into those intimate relationships that are so essential to our mental health and well-being, and also to counter this cultural narrative that we should also be happy all the time, or that we should be madly in love all the time. And if we're not feeling this passion or happiness every minute, then maybe the relationship is bad and we need to leave. And that's become kind of the common narrative since the 1980s. We moved past this kind of traditional ideal of marriage that was very patriarchal, that was very much about, you know, ownership. We moved out of that. But what filled its place was this soulmate marriage idea. And so there was this story that you needed to find your partner that would complete you and would fill you with passion and love and that soulmate experience for the rest of your life. But it set up even more challenges to relationships because for many people, it's unsustainable. As Bob was saying, those love hormones leave us quite quickly in relationships. And so as interestingly, as we've moved into the 21st century, this generation of millennials and the Gen Zs, but the millennials who are at marriage age, they're actually moving back a bit more to more traditional relationships. That they've grew up in an environment of high divorce rates, of parents who were married multiple times, who were chasing after their soulmates. And the millennials, surprisingly, are more grounded. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you have a comment or question, our number is 805-549-8855. We're also on Instagram Live if you want to jump on The Reluctant Therapist. So, Bob, what are your thoughts about that? Because you're a child of or a man of the post-feminist divorce and then soulmate marriage revolution.
Right. Well, you know, in one of my poems, I have a line which said, referring to the love relationship that I have with my wife, Andrea, I was not raised to this. I was raised in that patriarchal model. And my parents were together 69 years. And I was in my 50s, mid to late 50s, before they left the planet. I had a lot of time to spend around them. And they worked it out in their own way. But the basic message was, not one that really prepared me to show up in a way that would bring out the best in my partner and look for her to help me bring out the best in me, which I think, if you want to simplify it down, I think that's really what it's about. And to serve the relationship, to keep asking yourself, well, what's serves the greater good of the relationship rather than constantly me. Well, I've got to do this. I got to go play golf. I got to watch the Super Bowl, the guy stuff. I got to hang with my buddies. You know, well, what kind of a relationship does that leave you? Not that you need to give all of that up, but you know, when you dig your heels in around things that you absolutely have to have, that when you step back and look at them, they're really not essential. They're really just not essential. They're just part of sort of the cultural habituation that we grew up in. And we tend not to see them just like a fish doesn't see the water that it swims in. So I wasn't prepared for this, but through years of therapy, inquiry, poetry, and then learning Imago, I feel like, you know, I came around to a completely different view of relationship, that it is that the connection that I actually have with my wife is deeper and sweeter than anything that we experienced in the first year when we were just stoned on each other. Mm-hmm. You know, and really you have to ask yourself, you're walking around stoned on somebody that you really don't know them. You know, it was love at first sight, but like, what did we know about each other? Right. And now we really know each other well. And there's something so beautiful about that, that a kind of allowing and empowering of each other and patience. And just you said something on one of your shows that's always stayed with me. You said, you know, that we all have our own version of, you either use the word strange or weird. We all have that. Mm-hmm. And part of the question for anybody in a relationship is, can you just kind of flow with your partner's strange, right? And can they flow with yours? Because none of us is perfect, right? And I feel like I finally got there. You know, I'm only 74 years old. I'm a slow learner.
Right? Which is part of the beauty, though, isn't it? That you don't want to live your best life and have it over at 25. That part of that growth within yourself and with this partner is what I think that's what we're arriving to. And it's called a cohesive individuated marriage. I mean, that's like the clinical term for it right now, is that ideally we have a partner who encourages our own growth. Instead of me saying, I want this for me, you find a partner who says, I want this for you. And then I'm saying, and I want this for you. And so between the two of us, we're inspiring the other person's growth. Instead of separately doing our own thing, we're inspiring each other's growth together in a cohesive way, but it's still our individual growth. And I think that's what Imago and what you're describing.
Right. And to address some of the issues around COVID, which you brought up as you set this whole show up, there's no doubt that a lot of people are feeling additional stress and pressure, and they may be spending more time around each other than they ever did before. And they're finding that little things will trigger them into anxiety or anger, frustration, or whatever. It's actually, I would encourage people to study breath. It's good to learn how to breathe. You know, a little bit of meditation study is a good thing when it comes to this, yoga, breathing, whatever. And to see those moments when they're feeling agitated as, oh, this is a part of me that's trying to come out to speak up. What's it really about for me? You know, it's an opportunity to become conscious of things that have been buried. And some people might just say, well, we're just spending too much time together. And that might be true, right? But I don't know. I mean, my wife and I have managed to do this for a year. We're pretty insular, you know. We're old enough that we want to be extra careful around COVID. And, you know, by and large, we're having a pretty good time together. We're laughing together and playing 60s and 70s rock music and getting down in the living room together. You know, so there are opportunities to re-romanticize the relationship in the midst of all this. And I think it's important for people to think about this. In Imago, we say cease all negativity. We know that that's a big lift, but to try to be conscious about the things you do that put negativity into the space between you. But that's not enough. To clear out the space of the garbage that you may have put in there is not enough. We have to put positive things in there. We have to put new soil and grow new beautiful flowers in there. And so there are things that we can consciously do to try to bring the connection, which is what it's really about. That connection when we look in each other's eyes and we go, that's my person. The one person on the planet that's mine.
And it's interesting because you made a great point that a lot of people will say, we don't fight, we have no conflict, we don't say negative things, we exist very peacefully. But what they're missing is the other part is you then have to invest things that enhance the relationship that you look forward to. You know, the average couple spends 15 to 20 minutes a week together.
I know, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's 15, 20 minutes a week in intimacy. And that's not just sex, but like talking about their relationship or everything else is get the kids, take the dog out, go to the store, you know, very business communication. But intimate communication is 15 to 20 minutes. And some studies have shown that we need to spend upwards of 20 hours per week with our spouse to really maintain that connection, that hormonal connection. Because you talked about the passion, you know, piece, the love hormones fade after a while, but they don't go away. It just takes a little more time to get them ramped up, just like all the parts of us that need a little more time to get ramped up as we get older. But those hormones still live within inside us. And so when you're clearing negativity, what you're filling it with is those things that spice those hormones. And if you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today is Bob Kim. He's a certified Imago educator. He knows a lot about relationships and love. He's also a poet, and we're going to hear a little bit of his poetry in the next half of the show. But if you would like to be part of the show, you can give us a call at 805-549-8855, and Rachel will be happy to read your question or comment. You can find us on our Instagram Live. If you jump on to The Reluctant Therapist, if you do Instagram, grab your kid's phone. They'll show you how to find us. And you can see Bob and Rachel and myself on our Zoom. You can always send us an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to continue our conversation. And we are going to give you specific skills that you can try out and use as we prepare for Valentine's Day. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Listening to Central Coast Public Radio. We serve South Monterey, San Luis Obispo, and Santa Barbara counties. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at KCBX FM. The time is 2:32. Coming up at 3 o'clock is Fresh Air. Thanks for tuning in for this conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. If you have questions you want to have answered, we just call them in at 805-549-8855. Over to you, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much, Rachel. And thank you, Bob, for joining me for this hour. We're talking about Imago therapy specifically, but the overriding theme for today is taking a deep look at our most intimate relationships, because the pandemic has brought to the surface two extremes. Some couples, as Bob mentioned, are doing really well, that they are kind of thriving with this extra time together, that they're revisiting and rediscovering how intense that relationship with your most intimate partner can be. And then for other people on the other end of the spectrum, they're seeing issues come to light that they had tried to long keep buried, or they're finding that the issues that they ignored are starting to come forward. You know, we can only neglect our marriage or our partnerships for so long until the foundation crumbles. And for a lot of couples who really put intense amount of time into raising children or into their work, they're turning around right now and looking at their partner and saying, wait, where did you come from? And so aside from the, you know, increase in intimate partner violence that we're seeing and people struggling with more mental health issues, we also see people who are looking at their marriage and saying, wait, I need to make this work. This is where I want to be. But how do I breathe life back into that relationship that's kind of gotten stale? How do I reinvigorate those feelings that brought us together? Because you always can do that. You can always reignite some sort of flame, but you have to be willing to be vulnerable with each other. You have to be willing to put time into the relationship, and you have to be willing to fail. If every now and then things just don't work, you have to be willing to fail. But if you're too afraid to lose what you think you have, you can never improve what you're living.
So
let's talk about Imago therapy just briefly again for people who are just joining us. The Harville Hendrix and the name of the book. So if people want to do their own research.
So the first book that they wrote is called Getting the Love You Want. And his name is spelled I-X, Hendrix, H-E-N-D-R-I-X. Now, I actually recommend another book of theirs because I think it's winnowed down, and it's an easier read, and it's called Making Marriage Simple. And it doesn't matter if you're married or just in a partnership. It's a shorter book, and they present the fundamental practices much more abundantly than in the original book. So Making Marriage Simple, Harville Hendricks, Helen LaKelly Hunt. Okay, so again, the essence of Imago as a practice is that we need a structured way of communicating with each other so that we can really honor each other's realities, that we can acknowledge that we are not the same person, even though in the beginning of love, it's you and I are one, we were meant to be together, we're two halves of the same whole. Well, that rarely lasts more than a year, year and a half, at the outside 2 years. And then we begin to identify differences between us, which are fine. It's fine. But when we get into conflict, we can either have the conflict or we can see it as growth trying to happen. But to make that growth happen, we need some tools. And that's essentially what the dialogue does. It gives us this sort of pivotal tool that allows us to hear and really see each other. So, by the way, one comment I wanted to make about something you said earlier. People are spending 20 minutes, maybe, you know, before COVID, people were spending 20 minutes of real intimacy a week with each other. And apparently what's needed is about 20 hours. Yes. One of the things I want to say, particularly to younger people who have kids, is to not take that as an insult. And to look at it as, an undertaking where you're going to get in shape over time and you work towards sculpting out more and more time to be deep in each other's eyes in your relationship. And nobody's sitting around with a stopwatch, you know, judging you. Oh, you only did 25 minutes this week. You fail, right? It's just a matter of working towards it. And Imago has a philosophy which is essentially gradualistic when you get right down to it. There's a sense that we're not going for these big firework type breakthroughs. They happen occasionally. But basically, there's a gradual opening through the Imago dialogue and some of the other practices. And then, you know, people will call us and say, you know, we've been doing it for a year now after maybe they were in therapy for a year, got coaching for a year. And wow, now we're really getting it. It takes a little while to fully get your head around it. But just as an example, I mean, one of the things that we encourage people to do, even when they have a great marriage, is to verbally give appreciations every single day. And an appreciation can be something as simple as just, you know, like my wife knows that she makes a coleslaw that just, for me, is, you know, a home run, right? I've always loved coleslaw. So she has a certain way of making it. And yesterday she came to me. I just gotten off a phone session with a client. And she says, I made you some coleslaw. And I go, oh, you made me some coleslaw? She goes, yeah. Oh, man, I'm coming to get that. And I'm eating the coleslaw and I'm saying, thank you so much for doing this. This is like candy. I love your coleslaw. Not just, you know, stuffing my face and going, oh, yeah, this is, and making her say, well, is it good? You know, because you know she wants to hear it.
Yes.
Yeah, no, this isn't good. This is great. Thank you. Right? So I made a mistake.
Go ahead.
I want to give another example on the other end. I made a mistake of putting some white linen dish towels in with my wash, and they get very dingy looking. And Andrea's not real thrilled about that. And she made a comment about it. She said, please don't put these in with your wash because, you know, they lose their whiteness. And I said, oh, I'm really sorry about that. So I got on Amazon and I found some really nice white linen dish towels and I ordered them and they came yesterday. And I put them out on her placemat this morning before she came out to get her tea. And I put a little note on there that said, I will never, ever again wash these with my clothes. And she came out and she said, what's this? And she was really appreciative. You know, she knows that by that action, she knows I'm thinking of her.
And I love that because it goes along with the idea of making marriage simple. because we tend to get wrapped up in making things incredibly complex, or we leave things unsaid and we're afraid of conflict. But it's really much more simple. It's that the negative spirals are the positive spiral, right? And if one person comes to you and says a positive thing, I love your coleslaw, or I'm sorry that we're in conflict right now, but I love you and I appreciate the work you do, that immediately softens your partner so that they come back with something positive. So we're not really talking about, I love that you use coleslaw and linens, because we're not talking about rocket science. We're talking about the simple acts of living with another human being and connecting to their heart and realizing we all need affirmation. We all need to be recognized for our efforts. We all need to be appreciated. And it takes 30 seconds. In my side note story is I grew up in a house where my parents were really loud and fought all the time and then loved all the time. And it was just, it's a loud house. And I used to get, I used to wonder why my dad on a regular basis would say to my mom, I love getting up in the morning and pulling a fresh pair of boxers off the shelf. I just know you love me because I have fresh boxers. And I remember thinking, if my husband ever says that to me, I am going to be so disappointed. But now I get it.
Now you get
Once I got married, I got it. That when my husband would say, I love these clean boxers, I go, and that is love in a nutshell. Like if we look at our relationships from that simple fact of, I want someone on a day-to-day basis to experience my humanness.
Well, I would build on what you're saying, and I would put it this way. Love, to a large degree, is made or broken in very small acts, in brief moments in the course of the day. Am I seeing you? Are you seeing me? How do I know? Well, because you gave me an appreciation. How do you know? Because I acknowledged you. I gave you an appreciation. Or I just decided, you started talking to me about something, and I was going to do something else, and I stopped in my tracks. And I came back and I just sat down and was there for you and was looking in your eyes as you were talking to me. And then maybe asking questions, because what you're telling me is something that I'm interested in. You know, even if it's not my most passionate interest, it's your world, so I'm interested in it, right? So really, you know, showing up for each other in those little ways, I think is really critical.
I love that too, because, you know, you use the term, you talk about dialogues, and me from my clinician's, you know, seat, I get that, and the talk and listen and connect and reflect and mirror. But it really is simple in those moments during the day, because you said the key thing. If my husband's walking out the door and I say, hey, I want to show you something, when he turns around and comes back, puts his phone down and looks at me and listens, that makes the day. And one of the challenges is that we have our phones with us all the time. And so it challenges us even more to say, I'll put my phone down. I won't text while you're talking to me, that I will stop and I'll look. And that fills our heart, because the minute I look at you and say, Bob, tell me what you want to share. And then I acknowledge that that was important to you. Thank you for sharing it with me. Our hearts connect. As silly as it sounds, this energy has passed between us that locks that relationship. And every day we need to keep locking that relationship.
Right. There's another practice in Imago when we're re-romanticizing. We're trying to put some lyrical, poetic energy back in the space between us, that we call positive flooding. And it's something that people can do for Valentine's Day. And it's very simple. Think about what you love about your partner physically, what you love about their character, what you love about their behaviors. And you really spend at least a minute telling them, you know, for example, physically, I mean, I love my wife's nose.
Okay.
You know, I love her cheekbones. I love her eyes. I think she, you know, I love her hair. I just think she's a beautiful woman. And so I could look at her and say, you know, I want to give you a positive flooding, and I just start going down a list. For Valentine's Day, what I've done, I don't want to do it every year because I don't want to be predictable, but I get sticky notes in different colors, and I do the flooding on the sticky notes. So I might do 10 about her physical being, 10 about her character, and 10 about her behaviors, like I love it when you make me coleslaw, right? Mm-hmm. Or I love it when you take my hand when we walk across the street. And so I did these in different colored sticky notes, and we have a mirror at the end of our dining room. And, you know, after she fell asleep, I came out and I stuck these all over the mirror. And then I had a bunch, I think I had about like 10 Valentine's Day cards at the bottom of the mirror laid out for her to open. So when she came out in the morning, it was like she was just blown away. I mean, in the happiest possible way. And she stood there reading 30 of these, you know, appreciations of her qualities, right?
So it's a flood of love.
A positive flooding. And, you know, we don't have to do the whole thing every time, but I'm always telling her how beautiful she is, how cute she is, how funny she is, because she is to me. You know, I mean, these are reasons that I love her. So I make sure I let her know about that on a daily basis. And again, I think about that book by Thomas More, The Reenchantment of Everyday Life. You know, that's what this is about, is finding the poetry in these little moments between us in the course of the day.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Bob Kamm. He is a poet, an author, a consultant, and a certified Imago educator. And my guest today, talking about how we can put some spice into our Valentine's Day, even if we've been locked in for a year, how to kind of double down on our most intimate relationships. I mentioned at the top of the show that research supports consistently that those who are in healthy relationships have higher quality of lives than those who are alone. And it's important that those relationships be tended to. And in some ways, you know, parents, we're better at doing this flooding for our children, wanting to raise their self-esteem, right, making sure they know that they're loved, giving them hugs, you know, tucking them in at night. We should be putting that same energy, if not more, into our most intimate relationships, because our children are, from the moment we bring them home from the hospital, getting ready to launch out into their own lives. But right, our intimate partnership is there for the long haul. And right, so all of that same nurturing, tending to, saying positive things are the bread and butter of a long-term committed relationship. And I will side note say that sex doesn't hurt. And it's one of the first things, it might
well
hurt.
It shouldn't.
Yeah, it shouldn't hurt. It does not hurt the relationship, because it's right, the first thing that goes when relationships start to fumble. People right, stop being intimate. And once right, that goes, it's hard to keep that intensity together. So that fake it till you make it a little bit, like once you get started, it always feels good, but you have to take the time to get started. I'll throw that in there as well. Dialogue is fabulous, but sometimes quiet between the sheets is just as good.
Can I just add one thing to that?
Yes.
In my experience, men very often, when they're feeling deprived, they're going to speak about how they need sex, or they need to be touched, or they need this. I think that they ought to reverse that and basically tell their partner, you know, I really want to touch you.
Yes.
I want to touch you, and I in a loving way, and I want to give you pleasure. And try that and see what happens. Instead of making it about themselves.
That is such a great reframe, Bob, because that's the whole idea, is that if we have the best intentions of our partner in our heart and we're working to create a life that's good for them, they are then hopefully working just as hard for our life to be positive.
Right.
And that's the beautiful dialogue of relationships, is working towards the best life for your partner. And again, it requires some ability to be vulnerable, to trust. Yes. To take chance. Yep. It's not going to work in every relationship. You might find yep, that your partner doesn't have your best interests at heart, and maybe they don't have the capacity for commitment on the level that you do. And that is also part of the process of living our one extraordinary life, is to know that you are worth that kind of attention from someone else. Because couples also get into trouble if their spouse doesn't respond to the things that they feel they need. And then we close down and say, well, I'll just take care of myself. Tell you how many times I've heard people say, well, he's not capable of that, so I'll just take care of myself. And you've immediately put a wall between you and your partner.
Well, I would say don't give up easily.
Yes.
Don't give up on the relationship easily. You're with this person for a reason.
Yes.
One of the pieces of re-romanticizing is for us to retell each other our origin story, you know, what I remember of how we met, you know, my experience of it, and then her telling me what she remembers and what her experience was. And we go back there a lot. I mean, we love to revisit that because it's a beautiful story. And it is for most people, right? So let's not forget, you're with this person for a reason. Don't give up too easily.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we talked about at the beginning of the show, part of what Harville Hendrick's magic is he was able to point out that we tend to fall in love with someone who brings to us in our lives something that we might have been missing. And you use the great example of a heart-centered person quite often chooses a cerebral person because they're attracted to that. And vice versa, the cerebral person is attracted to the feeling person. But once we're in that relationship, that thing that we loved most about them quite often becomes the thing that's most annoying. That why is my cerebral person now not a feeling person like me? And the cerebral person says, why is my feeling person wanting me to be a feeling person? So part of that work and sticking with it and putting in the time is that if you do the work, you start to appreciate again what your partner brings to your life. And your work is to start actually growing those skills in yourself. That you, if you're a cerebral person and you're attracted to a feelings person, part of you wants to be a feelings person. So you have to do the work to move to that place where you're comfortable with your feelings. And that's the growth. And our fear of not being able to be comfortable with the feelings quite often causes conflict. But if you can recognize, I'm nervous about opening and having feelings because it's new to me and not because there's something wrong with the relationship. Bob, I want you to read a little poem for us. If you're comfortable with that, do you mind sharing some words of love?
Sure.
My guest is Bob Kam. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And Bob, aside from being a certified Imago educator, is a poet. And I think your latest book is Love Over 60?
No, well, this poem is from that. My latest book is actually called The Magic Hour.
Oh, The Magic Hour.
All my stuff is available at, you know, wherever books are sold, Amazon.com, et cetera.
All right.
We have a minute for this?
Yes, we do.
Okay, this is from Love Over 60, and it's called The Sweetness, and I wrote it for my wife. In the interest of full disclosure, there are times when our lyricism seems lost. We misconnect or disconnect. And sadly or not, this is part of real love in a real world of hurt human beings. Love is up to something quite different from what we expect. But, and I am so thankful for that conjunction, the sweetness prevails. The sweetness I never imagined. I, the fabricator of grandiose dreams, I, the boy who held his tongue beneath the honeysuckle blossoms and spoke to trees before he could speak to humans. And that sweetness is very specific. It is that moment in the evening when we stretch out together in our bed to relax, and suddenly you turn your head on the pillow and look at me. Your eyes become the fires where my child heart warms itself and listens for the ancient tales. This gaze arises beyond you and comes through you to me from all that is true and beautiful in woman-loving man, calling back to what is beyond me and comes through me to you, all that is true and beautiful in man-loving woman. Sweetness unimagined, no artificial flavor or color, no fine print, pure me, pure you, full disclosure of the soul.
It's beautiful. So in our last couple minutes, Bob, let's talk a little bit more about that re-romanticizing the relationship for Valentine's Day. Let's give a little Valentine's Day homework. I love the idea of the flooding, and my husband is a sticky note fan. I love finding them. I love that. And the idea of retelling your origin stories of falling in love. What's a couple more things?
So one of them is an exercise that kind of goes like this. I feel loved and cared about when you ... So you separately write down five different things. Now they can be things that your partner currently does, but you'd like more, or you'd like them to know that that really lands for you. It really matters to you. You can also include things that maybe they used to do, but they stopped doing. And when you get done with all of this, you share, you alternate. So for a woman might say, this is just common. I don't mean to be a misogynist here. It's just common. A woman might say, I feel loved and cared about when you bring me flowers. You used to do that. Would you consider, please, resuming that? Okay, you just ask in a nice way. Well, if you ask nicely, the odds are your guy's going to say, sure, you know. So you alternate and you just say, you just read it out. I feel loved and cared about when you. Now, it's a mistake to assume that your partner is a mind reader. Even if you've been together for 40 years, they don't always know what you need in the moment. And so this is the part about being vulnerable that you keep referring to. We have to have the courage to say, this is what works for me. This is what makes me feel loved and cared for, right? So that's an exercise.
And I love that exercise because quite often, if we know what our partner wants, we're more than happy to give it. And there's relief in having someone say, I feel loved and cared for when you, and then being given a plan. And also, if someone has been bringing you red roses for 30 years and you only liked carnations, you know, then that is not a positive. So to be able to say that, that's the vulnerable. Because the fear is your partner might say, well, I'm not going to bring you flowers at all if you don't appreciate my red roses. But that's a great starting point to say, but I would appreciate. Okay, we have time for one more.
Well, just a comment there about defensiveness. You know, the Gottmans that you're familiar with, John Gottman, has the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and one of them is defensiveness.
Yes.
So defensiveness can definitely do damage to a relationship. We all have a tendency to be reactive if we feel that we're being told we're not doing enough. And that's where I train my own clients is take a deep breath. And realize that you're about to launch into a defensive array to protect yourself and don't. And that takes practice. It takes practice, but that's a key. One more would be the relationship vision. Is take some time. Think about what you would like your relationship to be in 5 years and write it down, each of you separately, but write it in the present tense. Like, for example, maybe you're not retired yet, you know, but maybe it's we are happily retired because in 5 years we would be. We are financially secure. We have a beautiful physical relationship together. We travel the world together. We love our children together. You know, all of these things that you would like to be true in 5 years, each one of you writes them down. You make a list of as many as you can come up with. And then you compare them and see if you can combine the lists where you find the commonality. And that becomes your relationship vision. And you can type it out in the computer or whatever and do a nice design around it, stick it up on your refrigerator so you have to look at it every day. Now, there's another piece, but I think we're out of time.
I think we are, but I think that's a lot of good Valentine's Day homework. The flooding of love, the retelling of your origin story, then putting together a mission statement of where you'll be in 5 years. Bob Camp, thank you for being my guest today. You
thank
can
you.
Find Bob's work anywhere that you look for books. And I look forward to having another conversation soon with you. Thank you for listening and tuning in to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We'll be back next Tuesday at 2. Send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com or find us on Instagram or listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. Have a healthy, happy, healthy Tuesday and a happy Valentine's Day. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
It's a strange, the strangest emotion. I'm all wrapped up with my head in the clouds. The sweet child thinks she doesn't deserve.